edition into the Ted Brower Show. This is Sunday, September the 20th, 2015. We're working on getting Doug Hagman online, so I hope he's okay. He was supposed to be on here with me the first half of the hour, so hopefully we'll be able to get in touch with him and get him on for the second half of the hour, but that's okay. I'll be on with Doug this coming Wednesday night for 3 full hours, so I've got a full 3-hour show prepared, and so we won't have any problem covering the time for tonight. So if Doug does come on, Todd's going to let me know online real quick so you guys will hear all that. So we'll have fun with all that tonight if that happens. I want to share with you something real quick. They were just talking about Moses Malone died at 60 and how he was buried in the Lakewood Church, or had his funeral, his eulogy. The average life expectancy of a professional football player is around 47 years. They don't live very long. And the reason for that is because of all the physical abuse they do to their bodies, because of their diets. A lot of them are heavy steroid users. That really accelerates the aging process. And so it's interesting to me when I see these basketball or these football greats and they die so young all of the time. Most of them you don't hear about because they don't make mainstream news, because they don't know somebody famous, or somebody famous doesn't bring it to everybody else's attention. But the sad part about it is people don't understand something. Just because a person works out doesn't mean they're healthy. Remember a few years ago, gosh, it's been a couple decades ago now, with the ironic death of Jim Fix. He was a marathon runner who had transformed himself from an overweight, multi-pack-a-day smoker into a lean, mean running machine. He was actually doing American Express commercials. And when they autopsied Jim after he died, I believe he was in his early 50s, they found that he had all of his coronary arteries blocked. Now, there's some natural things that you can do to help eliminate some of that blockage and reduce and shrink that blockage. One of those is use pomegranate juice every single day. It's a great alternative to any other juice that you're going to drink, because it actually helps to shrink the arterial walls of the linings of the walls of the arteries, which gives you more blood flow. So pomegranate juice is something that I use every single day. Also, tart cherry juice is another natural alternative to arthritic conditions. It seems to help a lot of people as far as coping with the problems associated with arthritis. I know Dave Hodges will be coming on right after the show is over with tonight, and Dave was having problems with his knee, and he went on our joint care program and had tremendous results with that. And of course, Doug Hagman helped to bring his blood sugar down very, very, very easily. Oh. Hey, Doug, good to have you with me, buddy.
Hey, is this the right time, Ted? I thought it was the bottom of the hour. I didn't mean to impose early on.
No, this is the perfect time. We had you on for the first part of the show, and then we'll have you on. We'll run you to the bottom of the hour. So I was just bragging on you and your blood sugar, and we were talking about how Moses Malone had died and how they had his eulogy there in Houston this week, and how he was only 60 years old when he died from who knows what, probably either massive heart attack or from cancer. But, you know, Doug, I've known so many people now that are our age. I mean, you're younger than I am. I'll be 60 here in a few weeks, that are basically no longer with us. They've exited the planet for various reasons. A lot of them were natural health doctors who seemed to just automatically just either get shot or die from something strange. But, you know, how important is it, Doug, now that you've changed your diet and now you feel so much better, how important is it to maintain your diet and to do what you're supposed to do on a regular basis?
You know, I'm glad you asked me that question, Ted. I got to tell you, it's easier once you once you regulate your blood sugar. To me, it's a lot easier. The maintenance part of it, it's a lot easier than attempting to bring it down. So, what you've done, and really, I really want everyone to listen to this. I was really like a day or two away from having to go on insulin injections because, the medication wasn't working. And, I contacted Ted and Ted sent me the protocol that's on healthmasters.com. It's named after me. I'm not so sure that's a great thing or not, but, but as soon as I began that regimen, within 3 days, my blood sugar came down kind of like a stair-step approach or a stair-step thing. The bottom line was it was a dramatic, and I'll just say a dramatic change. So, ladies and gentlemen listening to this, if you are a type 2 diabetic or if you are, you know, on the cusp, man, do yourself a favor. Just start on that regimen, but you know what? You gotta stick to it. You gotta be very vigilant about taking the supplements according to Ted's recommendations. And once you do that, I'm not even sure I'm medically classified as a type 2 diabetic anymore, because I'm on no medication. I take my the supplements as directed, and I feel great. I really do. So, I mean,
Well, thanks, Doug. I appreciate that. I was talking about it because of Moses, but I want to bring you on because I want you to talk about what's going on with the Pope coming to the United States and all the news that you want to talk about, because you're my guest tonight. I'll be your guest on Wednesday night.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to kind of hog the show. I was already by full blown. I've got 40 pages of notes here for Doug's show on Wednesday night. I'll try to do most of these in the next hour show. So I'm glad you're on with me because I didn't want to do that. I want everybody to stay tuned back to your show on Wednesday night so they can hear me go through all of these notes. But real quick question. I have one article that I pull up that I do want to cover with you real quick to see how you think about it. There's this feminist mental health czar in England. And she's like working for the UK government. Her name's Natasha Devon. And she wrote a piece in the Daily Telegraph demanding that boys under age 16 be banned from attending gyms alone to prevent them from being too concerned about developing muscles.
Okay. All right.
Will the onslaught of these feminists ever stop?
No, no, and I think that we're, you know, this time, Ted, I believe this ties into this goddess worship. I mean, obviously, there's the practical side of it. There's a real side of it, but I believe this also ties into goddess worship. I believe this ties into the a number of things, including but not limited to this really Luciferian, twisted, convoluted Fabian socialist Marxist agenda where boy, where do you start, Ted? I mean, this is to me ridiculous. I had seen that, and what do you say about that? I mean, you're talking about the feminization of males, of boys,
well,
right?
Well, let me read what she says in the article. She says that she's concerned because gyms are places where peer-to-peer advice is given. And then she says there's a wider social significance, particularly for young men. She said it's difficult to be a boy because feminists have made the resemblance of male identity an anathema. Unless regulated and controlled by feminists, going to the gym has become an escape from this, because boys flock there to gain the tutelage of older, more established men. She said it's dangerous to go to a gym because young men are more vulnerable and dangers lurk beneath the gym's friendly edifice. There's a potential for a distorted body image, and gyms are currently providing a need which should be met somewhere else in the community, I guess in the gay and lesbian community.
What does that even mean?
I don't know, Doug. But the whole thing is just, I read that article, and I started laughing, and I thought about you and Joe, and I thought, gosh, we talked about this stuff so much about what they're doing, trying to destroy men and the boys, and now she's trying to make it illegal for boys to go to the gym under the age of 16. I don't even know what to say about this.
No, I exactly. And I think the what's seeping through here, at least in my view, is this agenda. This is a very destructive agenda. And this, oh man, you know, you talk about making the gender neutral, you know, all this. So man, what do you make of it?
I was, when I was about 14, 15 years old, I had a friend of mine, his name was Jerry Allen, and I remain eternally indebted to him to this day for this. I was a kid. Did you see that brutal beating of that thug beating up that little boy in school the other day? Actually, the guy out weighing probably 100 pounds, and he was probably a head taller than him. He was a football player, and some little kid was in the lunchroom. And the thug walked up to him and accused him of taking the visor off his football mask, which the kid didn't do, apparently. And he beat him unconscious. And when he's on the ground, this little boy was on the ground, he stomped his face. The little boy went into convulsions and started twitching because I guess he was suffering some type of partial paralysis or brain trauma from being kicked in the head like that. Now the 17-year-old thug is being charged with attempted murder and is in jail and he's being tried as an adult. It's kind of like another one of the Trayvon Martin nonsense things where you have a huge kid, 17 years old, you know, jumps on somebody else, and because they're a minor, they want to show 12-year-old pictures of them, which is complete nonsense when that happened with George Zimmerman. Now, I'm not saying that George Zimmerman was a poster child for normalcy, because he was not, but the reality is that this thug beat up this little boy. So when I was 13, 14 years old, I remember this back in the 60s, I remember Jerry Allen asked me one time, do you want to start going to the gym with me in downtown Winter Haven. Now, I had been working out a little bit at home, and what I learned as a child being raised in this redneck community that I still live in, which sometimes is hard for me to believe, is that there were a group of people that had failed 2 and 3 years, and I was set ahead because I had scored so high on the test scores a year, so I went into school a year early. And so here I am, this little kid, and I'm a year younger than everybody else in my class, and on top of that, there's people in my class that have failed 2 and 3 times. I'm like 13 years old, and there's 16, 17-year-old kids in the classroom with us. And so when I saw this thing with this thug beating up this little boy, I thought back on my time in Auburndale High School when I was a child, and I thought, you know, I never saw anybody get beat up that badly before, but I know how this little kid must have felt, because when you get hit or someone hits you and they're a lot bigger than you or older than you, it really is scary to you. And so I remember when I went to the gym when I was 13, 14 years old, started training, and then Jerry picked me up, started taking me over there all the time. It completely changed my life, Doug. I mean, it was a positive thing. There were positive leaders in the community there. There were real estate entrepreneurs who were successful business guys. There were people who cared about what they looked like. And I had a very good role model for years while I worked there. In fact, I ended up being a gym instructor there and worked there for multiple years. I kind of ran the place. I was assistant manager until I started college. And the thing about this is, when I read stuff from people like this lesbian who says this, it blows my mind, because it's none of her business if 16-year-old or 15-year-old boys want to go to the gym, and she doesn't have any right telling them not to go there. And so that's how I feel about it. I mean, to me, it's just more and more of the nanny state coming in and trying to control day-to-day activities of just normal childhood behavior, Doug.
No, you're exactly right. And by the way, getting back to that 17-year-old from Baltimore, he's being charged with attempted murder, first-degree attempted murder, which if you watch the video, and folks, boy, you have to have a pretty big, you know, pretty good stomach, because it's brutal. It's crazy. Of course, the defendant's, the attacker's mother says, you know, hey, there are two sides to every story, and my son is being portrayed as someone worse than he really is. Okay. Yeah. Just watch.
But, you know, I have a good friend of mine, Mancow. I sent him that link, and he's a radio and personality out of Chicago. Good friend of mine. He was on my show when I was, actually, he was on the show when I hosted the Power Hour, as you were too, Doug. And what was interesting with this is that I emailed that to him, and he was just shocked by it too. And the thing about it is that, you know, I told him this. I said, this is just a further indication of how horrible our educational system has become. In addition to that, why didn't somebody jump this kid, this big kid? If I'd have been there, I'd have picked up a chair if I'd have been 17, 18 years old, because I'd been working out for 3 or 4 years too by that point. I'd have picked up a chair and broke it over this guy's head. That's straight out assault, trying to kill somebody.
They're too busy filming them. They're too busy taking it on, you know, so they can put it on YouTube. I mean, this is a new normal now, isn't it?
Well, no. I mean, I would have grabbed him. I'd have thrown him down. Now, I mean, there's no way. I mean, it's insane that we've lost the alpha males in this society. And I mean, we have no alpha male. Of course, this black guy's he was an alpha male. I mean, but the point was, he could have been a white guy too. And he's a bully, is all he was. And the sad part about it is that we can't allow this. This is not okay, Doug. This is not okay for a society to function like this. People shouldn't be scared to death to go to school. This is, amen. There's no part of this that's okay. No part of it. And then we got this girl saying that nobody should go to the gym. That's right. This little boy shouldn't have been in the gym working out, so that way somebody could take advantage of him and beat him half to death. That's okay. Remember what they said a few years ago when they were talking about how if you get abducted or somebody tries to rape you, if you're a woman, that you can't fight back now, you can't try to gouge their eyes out, that you have to just lay there. And I think they said you need to defecate or urinate on yourself and just lay there and pretend like you're dead. I mean, this is what they're trying to turn us into. They're trying to turn us into all a bunch of sheeple who don't want to do anything. Today we had a big vote in our church. And I don't even know what the vote was for. I never saw any published paperwork on the vote as far as what we were doing in the church to consolidate a bunch of debt, apparently. And so, I mean, they didn't talk about what this we were voting on. They just said, we're doing this to consolidate debt, da, 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 da. And so they all in favor say aye, all in favor say nay, okay? So, you know, raise your hands. And so, like, the whole church raises their hands and says aye, all in favor say nay. And I was the only person that said nay that I saw. I raised my hand. I thought, well, I don't know what they're doing. Why am I going to vote for something that I don't know what they're doing? I need to read the paperwork first. I'm not going to sit here and vote for something. I haven't seen this stuff published anywhere. I can't find it on the website. I mean, what are they doing? I mean, why are we voting yes for something that we haven't seen and we haven't read? I remember years ago, I was at Carpenter's Home Church, Doug. This is completely off the subject. And we were there and they were having a meeting on Wednesday night. And I remember my wife and I were there, and they were in trouble financially. Huge. They had built this huge auditorium, which since then has been torn down and completely gone. They're completely out of business, the whole church. They had 6,000 members. They built this 10,000 square foot, 10,000 member facility. Oh gosh, it's huge, as big as a football field. And it was interesting to me because they asked us in the middle of this meeting if we would vote to take on more debt for the church in this big building project that we were doing. And I got up and I said, you know, I don't know the full parameters of what you're doing. I said, but you're telling us every Sunday that we're in austerity and we've got all these problems going on. Don't you think maybe we shouldn't take on any more debt? Just maybe we should just pay off what we've done now instead of signing on to more? And they said, well, you don't understand. And I said, well, I hate to tell you this. You know, I taught marketing and management at the college level for years. I said, I think I do understand it. And I said, I'd like to read it. Well, no, it's beyond the scope of our conversation. We're just voting yay or nay. And I said, well, I vote nay. And I remember there were four of us in there, my wife, myself, and Gerald and Jeanette Hooker, who owned Hooker's Department Store in Plant City, and there were probably 500 people there that night. And everybody voted yay. The two business owners, me and Gerald, we voted no more debt. And sure enough, that whole thing goes out of business a few years, you know, a couple decades later, it's completely gone and kaput. And the thing about it is that we need to realize this is what's happening in the United States. Now we have the Donald Trump sideshow that's going on. You know, and don't get me wrong, I like Donald Trump, but
alpha male.
I don't believe the GOP is going to put him in. What do you think, Doug?
No, and it goes back to that pledge that he was asked to sign, that ultimately he acquiesced and signed. And it's my understanding, based on my sources, what they are the whole thing behind that is to keep him out of the race by controlling the superdelegates. So, in other words, there's backroom dealing, okay, with the delegates, because you have to have so many delegates to be on the ticket. So, for example, I'll just use this as an example. California, the head of the California Republican Party in this case will say, well, our delegates, we're not going to pledge our delegates, despite the popular aspect of this, we're going to pledge our delegates to, I don't know, Jeb Bush, for example. So even before the convention, the delegates are already pledged, which it's an unlevel playing field. But they're taking away the sufficient number of delegates, so Trump will never be on the ballot in that state. And that's what when Trump referenced that statement, if they don't treat me well, or if they don't treat me fairly, I think it was. This is what he was talking about. He was talking about the manipulation of superdelegates to keep him off the ballot to certain states that require him to win, or that are required for him to win, or to be. So if he's not allowed on the ballots of certain key states, he's never going to win the nomination. And this is what he was referring to. And this is what the Karl Rovian GOP people behind the scenes are doing. And that's why I think that in the end, it's a Karl Rove structure that's going to keep Donald Trump off the ballot in certain states. And I really believe that this is in the works, and to put the GOP establishment candidate on the ballot by keeping the states, you know, certain states from electing or, you know, allowing the nomination of Trump. And this is something that came to me by two different sources. So, you know, what's the next step? Well, the next step would be for him to break away, go independent, and then you have a situation that we had in the early 20th century with Theodore Roosevelt and the Bull Moose Party and that whole thing playing out again, which will then guarantee, well, I say guarantee, certainly support a Democratic candidate and a Democratic successful election for the 2016 elections. That's kind of what I'm seeing as it relates to Donald Trump, according to the sources I have inside the political spectrum, inside the Beltway.
Well, you know, Roosevelt, when he ran again, because, you know, he'd already lost the election once, and he ran again in the Progressive Party, the Bull Moose Party, he ended up splitting that vote, and it was done on purpose to put Woodrow Wilson in office, because Taft was running against him. It was all about bringing in the Federal Reserve Act, which is what the whole thing in Syria is all about. They're not wanting
exactly.
to use, they're not wanting to use the remember, Syria has an independent central bank, you know, so does Iran.
Yep.
And, you know, and Egypt used to have one, now that's gone. And so these, the Rothschild satanic banking cartel that pretty much runs the financial world in the western part of the world, they want to take over Syria. And that's the whole point. And that's why we're having this massive flood of immigrants into Europe. I've got a good friend of mine. His name is Jurgen Klum. And he has a bakery up in Yalaha, Florida. He has all these friends now that are calling him from Germany, wanting to leave Germany and come to the United States to work here for him, because they said it's becoming untenable, the amount of refugees. And he said that things are happening there that haven't happened since Hitler's time, and that they're building these tented refugee camps right now in Germany, and that the citizens of these towns are going in out into these with torches and burning these tents and burning these refugee camps because they don't want these people in their towns. And so this is going to be a major problem. But of course, it's all planned. It's like they're doing with the open borders, and, you know, in Mexico. It's all planned. Tell everybody how it's planned, like what they're planning on doing with all of this.
Well, and I had written about this back in 2013. This all goes back to Libya. This all goes back to the Arab Spring, but then Libya, the takeover of Libya, and of course what happened in Benghazi. That was really a plan by the Russians to show the world what the Western intelligence agencies, including the Mossad for Israel. Sorry, folks. I mean, they've got their hands dirty on this, as well as the CIA, and other Western intelligence agencies. Shipping arms to the Syrian anti-Assad rebels, or terrorists, more appropriately. And this was to take out Assad to create a Sunni state, okay? So having said all of that, what we're seeing today is, now Syria has a population of, what, 21 million, I believe 21 million people, and according to reports, over half, or at least half, are refugees. The problem is, when you start crunching the numbers and looking at the influx of refugees into Europe, the numbers don't add up. You don't have under the pretext of Syrian refugees, you've got refugees from Libya and from other affected countries. Now, that's not to say that Syria has not been affected, because it certainly has, but it's been affected by the CIA operations and Western intelligence operations. But the key here is to topple Assad. That's the bottom line. It's always been there, to topple Assad and to create a Sunni state subservient to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. And we, as the American intelligence agencies, in conjunction with the Israel Mossad, and this is not an indictment against the Jewish people, please don't think that, but this is at a higher level. What they want to do is create a vassal state in Syria that'll do the kingdom's bidding for them. And also, this is against what Russia wants, of course. So you see right now today, Russia moving in all of these heavy armaments, including anti-aircraft weapons. Now, let me ask you, Ted, do you know, does ISIS have an air force? I don't think so. So who are those anti-aircraft weapons brought in for?
I just want to know where ISIS got the Abrams tanks.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if tanks have keys, but I'm sure that there were... I'm sure it says made in America on the keys, if not.
Well, we know that the whole thing with ISIS is, we know that's a big CIA deal. It's all about destabilizing the Middle East. I remember years ago, Doug, I talked to General Schwarzkopf about this personally. And I also talked to Colin Powell about this personally back in the 90s after the first Gulf War with Bush Sr. And they both told me that they did not want to go into the rest of the Middle East because of the instability that would cause. Mm-hmm. And Colin Powell said it was absolutely a horrible mistake to have gone any further. And Schwarzkopf said it was a horrible mistake to go any further and take out Iraq. And so here we are. Now we find ourselves 20 years after I was doing seminars with these guys. And we've gone in there. Everything's completely destabilized. And we got Russia bringing in armaments. And by the way, the Europeans and the Germans and the French now have aligned themselves with the Russians and have agreed to allow them to come into Syria to try to help stabilize the entire mess there. So we've got a fracturing of this Rothschild banking cartel oligarchy that's being run through the Catholic Church, et cetera, et cetera. And the different parts of the world are just saying, hey, you know, we don't want to do this. We don't want to be involved with this anymore. And Jero Salenti says, when this happens, when everything starts to fracture like this, the only thing we have left is to go to war. Because Absolutely. We know that the Fed wasn't going to raise interest rates last week, because they can't, because once they raise interest rates, they're going to collapse bond prices. And that's going to happen globally. And when that happens, that's $250 billion worth of bonds being traded globally. And that's without derivatives. That's just, I think, $680 trillion in bonds that are on the books. And that's not including the derivative investments that are based in bonds, which who knows what in the world that is. So once the bond prices start falling, there's going to be a huge deck of cards that are going to fall. And they know this whole house is coming down around them as we speak. But they're just all desperate trying to maintain it. I mean, you got everybody. You got the Middle Eastern countries now selling the government bonds and the government paper, the treasury bond, the treasury notes, and you've also got China dumping them like crazy. That they've dumped, oh gosh, hundreds of billions of dollars worth already. And we know that the Federal Reserve is the only person pretty much buying their own paper now, which means we have the central bank printing the currency through the treasury, buying their own bonds and treasury bills. I mean, it's like a banana republic. And the problem is nobody wants to talk about the fact, unless, it was Ron Paul, who, by the way, did a much better job than Rand Paul does. And Ron Paul said that the only way we're going to ever get stable money and get a stable economy going again in the United States is that we have to have a return to solid, to real money, and we have to get rid of the Federal Reserve. We have to nationalize the assets. I was listening to an interview today by Catherine Austin Fitz. She said something very interesting, Doug. She said that the biggest problem that we have is that the banking system controls the entire infrastructure to the global economy, you know, with all their computers and all their data that they collect, and that the shadow government controls the military-industrial complex through all of its infrastructure that is put together, and that the real government and the real people don't control any of this infrastructure. And the only way to take over the United States and to restore the republic is we have to have the ability to go in and seize the infrastructure with the computer databases. Otherwise, we can't do it. It'll be nothing but just a complete and total disaster if we try to go in there without that.
Boy, you're right. I mean, you're exactly right, and that's very insightful.
Well, no, because I was listening to a show that she had done. Gosh, I listened to about 2 hours today, and I have to admit, I fell asleep through part of it. But, I got through most of it, and it was just so. She was being interviewed by a guy who wasn't like you. He wasn't a good interviewer, and so it's just I was having to deal with, you know, with a monologue pretty much with her, and I thought, you know, she's absolutely right, because, you know, she's been head of the housing thing with the government, and she said they stole $40 trillion. They've actually extracted $40 trillion out of the United States to build their military space programs, you know, and also their underground military bases, Doug. I mean, how in the world can we ever prove they've done this? Do you have any idea how we could actually go back and do that? Because, I mean, they admit to having lost tens of trillions of dollars, but nobody wants to even force them to try to figure out what happened to the money. How do we fix this, Doug?
Boy, if I knew the answer to that, I'd really be popular, I think. You know, it's interesting because anytime, you know, money is missing or being questioned, I mean, look what happened on September 10th of 2001, you know, how much money was missing from the Pentagon, what, $2.3 trillion, according to Rumsfeld, and bam, we had 9/11, and that's the last you heard of that. Now it's coming around again. We've got additional monies missing from the military budget. How can you prove that? You know, I don't know. But I'd like to go back to something really quick that you said, if I may, about the International Monetary Fund. One thing I found extremely interesting, and I'll just be very quick on this as an aside here, you had Christine Lagarde addressing prominent members of the media back in 2014 January at the I believe it was the National Press Club. And remember that really odd occult-sounding reference to, I mean, she used magic, the term magic in reference to numerology and so on. Well, you know, that meant something, and I think that that there was a message there given. Well, but here back January 15th of this past year, of this year, Lagarde gave another occult speech titled Three Rosetta Moments for the Global Economy in 2015. And I think that speech right there, and if people are familiar with that, people should take a listen to that, because I do believe that that kind of segues into what we may see happen, or at least the seeds planted for events this coming week with respect to the Pope coming here, speaking to the Congress, speaking to the United Nations. And it's not just about the world economic situation. It's really a religious leader, the Pope, pushing a Marxist agenda, which is non-biblical. And I think that this plays right into all of this. So what we're seeing happen, and geopolitically, everything's driven by money, the Rockefellers and Rothschilds. I know that there's some infighting there. Otherwise, if there wasn't infighting, I do have a feeling this agenda would be a lot further along than what it is. But bottom line here is this. All of the seemingly disparate events that we just talked about in this short period of time, they're all connected, and they're all leading up to this crescendo moment, this hinge moment, the defining moment in history, and I believe that we're going to see that in short order. That doesn't mean that things are going to change overnight. It doesn't mean that things are going to change this week, but I think that the seeds, the foundation will be built for a one-world monetary system this week using the Pope and using the political infrastructure of the United Nations, as well as the IMF and the Bank for International Settlements as the vehicles to do so. So all of this seems to be coming together, coming this convergence, and it's going to also be interconnected to the geopolitical affairs in Syria, which we have to watch, because we are going to have American soldiers fighting Russian soldiers in Syria if we decide to go that route. And I'm telling you right now, it's not going to be good. But I've always contended World War III is not going to start in Ukraine, but in Syria, and we're about to see that happen.
Wow, Doug, I really, really hope that the timing is not correct. I hope that we're going to have a few more years anyhow. I mean, but you're absolutely right. I don't really know what to say because, you know, we don't know what's happening over there. I mean, this happened a couple of years ago. You know, Russia sent their carrier groups and China sent their carrier groups off the coast of Syria. We were about to invade them then, and then Russia and China put a stop to it. And now, and I remember I told my friends, I said, you have no idea how close we just came to World War III. And now it seems like we're pushing that envelope again. This satanic cartel that runs this planet, or at least the western portion of the planet, they are so bent on destroying everything God created, Doug, that they really don't care if they take us to World War III. They've got their deep underground military bases. They've got their space-based weapons platforms now. They've got all the stuff they've got. They probably are itching to try it out because they don't look at us the way we look at human beings. They don't see us as individuals and creatures in God's eyes. They see us as animals. They see us as feral cats or rats that are eating the corn crop or ants that have jumped on you from a fire ant bed. That's all they see us as. They don't see us as humans. Otherwise, they wouldn't be selling baby parts and having these horrible videos come out now, and you see that these babies are being born alive and being dismembered, and they're having to hold their hand over the baby's mouth because the baby is screaming while it's being cut up. I mean, this is insanity, Doug. We live in a situation in a society that's actually willing to do this and willing to tolerate this type of behavior while the sheep will just go baaah and continue to sleep while they continue to vote on stuff they have no idea what they're voting on. You know, I mean, how would...
Yeah, and let me just say this about that that issue. You know, the big cry is to defund Planned Parenthood, and of course, you know, in the House there was it was just voted on to defund Planned Parenthood. That's all just a dog and pony show. It's not going to pass. It's not going to make it through the Senate, and even if it's going to be vetoed. So all of this is just nothing but entertainment or pablum for the masses. The bottom line here is this behavior is going to continue. This satanic behavior is going to continue. And I would say this in to wrap up the Planned Parenthood issue. You know, it's not enough to defund Planned Parenthood. If the people were serious, if the Christians were serious, if the church was serious, if the Christian governors were serious, or if they were lawful as opposed to lawless, because bottom line here, judicial supremacy is not, I mean, judicial supremacy is a myth. Roe v. Wade, not the law of the land. Obergefell, not the law of the land. There is no law that allows, contrary contrary to the phrase, well, it's the law of the land. BS. It's not the law of the land. That is nothing but a mind control mantra phrase by these pukes who want to continue in the satanic. The bottom line is this. The governor of any state where Planned Parenthood is operational, if he and he has the right, in fact, he's got the duty to go in there, not just in the Congress, not just to fund Planned Parenthood, but go in there, shutter these places, and have those people arrested for crimes against humanity and trafficking in human body parts, USC 42289 G2. That's the statute. Bottom line, it needs to be done, but there's no one with the guts, intestinal fortitude, integrity, character, or godlike fear to go in there and do it.
No, I that well said, Doug. I you're absolutely right. We have a nation of sheeple that have been so brain dead from so long, from the fluoride and from the immunizations and the mercury and the aluminum put in the immunizations. I mean, they're literally changing our biochemistry and changing our synaptic function by the drugs and the chemicals they put into our food, into our water, into our injections they're giving almost everybody now, that, you know, the statin drugs alone are causing massive, massive brain problems as far as people can't think anymore. If people want more information on the health aspect of what we're talking about tonight, because I haven't even mentioned this yet, it's healthmasters.com. And that's our website, my website, healthmasters.com. If you look down about halfway down the front page, you'll see the Hagman Blood Sugar Protocol and the Hodges Healthy Joint Protocol. And we tell you in those, and you know, on those products exactly how to take those products and change your diet and help to stabilize and have healthy blood sugar and healthy joints. So the whole thing is this. You know, also we also have a newsletter you can sign up for that's absolutely free. But the thing about it is, Doug, is that we, and I like the, I particularly like it when Paul McGuire does this, when he talks about, and Chuck Baldwin, when he talks about how we as the American people have allowed this to happen, and the pastors and the churches have allowed this to happen. What can we do to wake up the churches, Doug? How can we make the people in the church say, oh, we're not going to do this anymore? How can we make the pastors awake? I mean, they're all caught up in their 501(c) corporations. I mean, how can we get them out of that stupor?
Boy, again, great question. I'm not sure if I have the answer, but, you know, it seems like we've got them outnumbered. We've got, according to the estimates that I've got, about 440,000 evangelical pastors located here in the United States. You would think with numbers like that, there would be enough people, enough of evangelical pastors to go out there and to surround, we'll say, the governor's mansions. There'd be enough people to go out there and to do what they need to do. Get off the couch. Get out from behind your computer keyboard. Go out there and do something proactive. And to hell with the ramifications. Look, we are, you know, we have to get back to the Bible. We've got to be the salt and the light. And if we're, and we're certainly not acting like that, as Christians, period. So, part and parcel to all of this is this Marxist, I'm sorry, but this Marxist Pope pushing this socialist Marxist agenda, and you know, look, we need to wake up, and we need to wake up soon. How can we do it? We just have to keep talking and spreading the information, being watchmen like Jeremiah, and hoping and praying that people will react and respond to the threats that we face. Because if not, you know, our progeny, this is the difference between our progeny, our children, and their children visiting our graves with contempt and spitting on the ground on which lies in front of them, our graves, or visiting our graves and saying, you know, the legacy behind he or she or they actually did something and changed the way the world you know, change the way things had, were going to play out. So, you know, a lot of prayer, a lot of action. We need to be the salt and light. And but the technicality, or you know, the actual mechanics of it. Hey, look, just show up. Let's play our positions. We all have positions to play. And you were born. Everyone listening to this broadcast, I like to say this all the time, and I know Ted that you're part of this too, man, in a big way. Everyone listening to this broadcast, you were born for this time. You were born for a time like this. You've got a message. You know, check your message or your answering machine. Check your cell phone. Check your email, because God is sending. He doesn't need to use email or whatever, but understand what your position is. Understand what your message is. Read your own mail and then go out and do it. And if you have to spend time in prayer on your knees, then by all means do it in order to understand what your role is in these last days, in this end time, if this indeed is the end time. But we all need to go out there and be proactive to the best that we can. And you know, if you're infirmed and can't move or can't get out of the house, then pray. Pray like you've never prayed before. Make some phone calls, whatever you can do. But let's do it.
Well, also, Doug, too, I want, you know, your website's HagmanandHagman.com, and I want everybody to go to your website. You've got a page there where people can click on and support your ministry, because I consider what you do to be a ministry in the show that you produce. And I want everybody that is listening to this show tonight, I mean, if everybody just gave Doug 5, 10, 15, 20, 50 bucks, 100 bucks a month, it would give him the opportunity to really expand his networks, really expand what he does as far as with the video feeds and all the different things that he does. And it would give us the opportunity to get more and more people involved in a way. I personally believe the time is extremely short. I've never felt this way before. I had somebody contact me this week, and they want me to be on the show. And I told them, I said, well, I don't have a problem being on the show. I said, but let's get through October.
Amen to that.
He said, well, I've never heard you talk like that before. And I said, well, I've never really talked like that before. Let's just get through October and get through the end of this year, and we'll have a bunch of people on. I said, I've got an hour a week talk show. I said, we'll expand that, you know, as we have more satellite time that comes available. But the point is, you know, we've got to understand something. You know, if not now, Doug, when? You know, I remember I was talking to this guy yesterday, and he was making all these excuses. He's got a kid who's a doper. The kid's like 13, 14 years old. He started using marijuana. People don't realize when kids start smoking marijuana when they're that age, it stops additional synaptic development and brain connections, and they literally become a 13, 14-year-old child the rest of their life, and they never mature. And that's why you see these kids that are 30, 40, 50 years old who were smoking pot back in the 60s and 70s, they're still living in their parents' basement. And you know, they can't get a job, and they're still wearing their high school clothes, for heaven's sakes. And it's because of what's happening with, you know, with the drugs. And I told him, I told my friend, here's the deal. You need to send him to like a teen camp challenge type place that can help him to overcome these drugs. You and your wife are not equipped to deal with this. I said, you want to be able to say, I'm so glad that I did, not I wish I would have. And that's what I'm saying to the listeners tonight, Doug. We all need to be able to say, I'm so glad I did, not that I wish that I would have. And see, if we don't do something now, it's exactly what you said. Our children and our grandchildren will come to our graves, and they'll look at them, and they'll look at our graves, and they'll say, dude, why did you do this? Why did you allow, you know, Lucifer and his bunch to hang out here and take this thing over? You could have at least postponed it. You could have at least asked God for you know, for a reprieve for at least a few more generations of people to get more people saved. How in the world did you let the United States fall? Well, the falling of the United States started way, way, way back in with the Bank of America with Biddle and those boys, you know, in 1812. That's how they got that War of 1812 to stop. People don't realize that. We put in a central bank. And then that was had his charter, and Andrew Jackson got rid of it. And these Rothschild cartel, Satanist, Luciferian worshippers, they're from the Frankist, they're from the Sabbatean Frankist group. They're not even real Jews. They're Luciferians. They're basically taking over the country. They started this back in 1812 because they'd already taken over pretty much the Bank of England. And then now they've continued to work all the way until 1913, which you mentioned so much earlier, with Theodore Roosevelt splitting that vote with Wilson and with Taft, and put in the Federal Reserve here. And now we went from the greatest creditor country in the world to the biggest debtor country in the world. And we're still sending out hundreds of billions of dollars in foreign aid every single year, and we're writing IOUs for it, and we're completely broke. And that's the one thing I really like that, you know, that Ron Paul used to always say, is why are we giving away foreign aid to foreign countries? Why do we have hundreds of military bases all over the world, and why are we still trying to do this empire building when the United States is fiscally bankrupt and we simply can't pay the bills any longer, you know, without going deeper and deeper into debt? It's like getting a new credit card every month to pay the bills. Sooner or later, you're going to have to file bankruptcy, and that's where this country is coming and where it's headed. How long do you think before we lose the reserve status of the world as far as the petrodollar, Doug?
Boy, I was back in 2012, 2013, I was thinking any time now. And that's based on, in part, on Kyle Bass's interview, economist and journalist Kyle Bass talking with an unnamed Obama administration official, who I believe was Timothy Geithner, who said, you know, when they were talking about debt and handling debt, you know, how are we going to do this? How are you going to rein it in? And I believe it was Geithner who said, we're just going to kill the dollar. So to answer your question, when every single cent, every nickel has been sucked out of the middle class here in America, because at the epicenter of this battle, I believe the target is the middle class. The target is the productive element of our society. They want to subjugate the power elite, wants everyone in this country to be subjugated to a welfare kind of state, and that makes them dependent, and dependency creates a captivity. Captivity, of course, means control, and it's easier to control a population who's hungry, who's tired, who's homeless, as we've seen here in the Middle East. So this is what's on tap for you know, the West and the United States and specifically. But to answer your question, I think they're going to pull the trigger when they are ready, when every last dime, every last thing of value has been taken out of the middle class. But you know, I believe it's going to be sooner rather than later. We're going to lose the reserve currency. The only thing holding up our reserve currency is, of course, our ability to ensure the safe passage of oil and energy across the world. Well, look how well that's going right at the moment. And the side, the side agreements with the BRICS nations and with Russia and with China and now with Iran. It seems that this particular regime and those people in power are just angling for us to lose that reserve status. And when that happens, it's just not going to implode here in the United States. It's going to be worldwide, and there will be people. You know, it was said that any movement, upward movement, like by 0.25% of our interest rates, results in the starvation of untold thousands of people in the third world. Well, this is going to be the exponentially worse than that. So, and on the other side, Ted, and I don't mean to dominate the conversation, but on the other side too, I hear people saying, well, man, wouldn't it be good not to have a Federal Reserve, and, you know, let's destroy the Federal Reserve. Well, no, because what you're going to have, I mean, yeah, I agree with it in principle, but you're not thinking it through, because you're going to just have a global global reserve in the form of the IMF or you know, some other entity taking over the monetary system, and we are going to be just crushed here in the United States and all throughout the West.
No, you're absolutely right. And if you go back to what Catherine Austin Fitz said today, she said that what happens is that if we try to take this stuff over without the ability to control the computers and the infrastructure that is in place, that the entire thing is going to collapse almost immediately. And see, that's the thing we have to do. We have to leave it intact. And what we a system of credit is absolutely necessary for a society to run, period. We all know that. The difference is the system of credit doesn't have to use usury. And usury is what they've done. And that's why Jesus forbid the usury. The Bible forbid the usury. God Almighty himself forbid usury. And so that's why Jesus hated those money changers in the temple. But what's interesting to me, what, a week after he threw the money changers out of the temple, they crucified him. The powers to be took him out, or at least they thought they did. And of course, he rose from the dead, which kind of threw a big wrench into all of their plans. And the reality is this: we've got to learn what they're doing. We have to have enough people who can take over these Federal Reserve banks, maintain the system of credit in place, but we have to nationalize the assets of the Federal Reserve and go ahead and get rid of all of the debt from the interest they've charged us. This should be something the United States is doing for its own people, not through interest through a foreign bank. And that's what people have to understand. We can't just get rid of the Federal Reserve. It needs to be nationalized, become part of the Treasury, and the infrastructure and the mechanics behind it need to stay in place, or we'll be in for some kind of rude awakening, as far as when the money you wake up and it's worth absolutely nothing, and none of the ATMs are working, and none of the EBT cards are working. And so when all that, if that happens, we're going to have rioting in the streets, mass population migration, and that's what Deagle is saying. As far as why the population, they're saying within 10 years it's going to be down to 65 million, I believe, in the United States. They're saying that we're going to have a mass exodus going south, into the warmer areas down in around Mexico, and people are going to be leaving the United States along with war, and it's going to, you know, it's going to, they're saying that we're going to lose, you know, lose hundreds of millions of people in the United States. So I don't know what in the world to believe with any of this stuff. All I know is, like I mentioned earlier, that even Gerald Celente is saying that when all else fails and these guys start to lose control, they crank up their military industrial complex and start killing people. So I hope you're wrong about what's going on in Syria, Doug, but I'm afraid you're right about that too. It's going to be sad. I just hope we can postpone it.
You know, I really believe we dodged a bullet a couple of years ago when that false flag chemical attack took place, and that was exposed for what it was, a false flag. But at this point, now the stakes are raised even higher when you've got anti-aircraft weapons from Russia, and it's always been the... Watch. You're going to hear from NATO, we have to have a no-fly zone for the safe passage of the refugees. That's going to be the pretext for the no-fly zone. And at that point, I believe that will be the match that lights the tinder, the dry tinder, for a hot war in Syria.
Well, I think they've got their hands filled with Putin. I don't think he wants to. Well, you know, the same thing is, because it's interesting, because, you know, the Rothschild Central Bank is the one who was controlling Russia. Now, some people say that Putin's throwing them out. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But, you know, they're the ones who started the whole Bolshevik Revolution. We all know that. I mean, that's just history now. And what's interesting about all of this is that Putin is kind of like Hitler was. You know, Russia got started through all of this as far as the communism with Stalin and Lenin and all those guys. And now all of a sudden they're not doing what they're being told to do anymore. That's what happened with Hitler. Remember, the European bankers and the American bankers in the industry are the ones who put Hitler in power. And suddenly, I guess he decided that his idea of how he's going to worship Satan was going to be more practical than what they were doing. And that's pretty much, there's a really good book. It's called, Pawns in the Game by William Carr. And everybody needs to read that. Everybody needs to read that. That book's like a tutor book. It was written back in the 50s, and it was written back right after World War II was over with. And he said basically that the Russians won World War II because they got half of Europe given to them. Given to them. Poland, Czechoslovakia, half of Germany, Hungary. All of those went to iron bloc countries. And Russia didn't deserve to get those countries. Those were independent countries, but yet they became part of the Soviet Union as the Iron Curtain fell. And our leaders gave them that, Doug. Our leaders are the ones who did that. So everybody needs to read that book. But again, I'll be on with Doug this Wednesday night. We'll be discussing my 40 articles. We'll be discussing the 40 articles that I have here on my desk. We'll be going to more and more nutritious stuff, more and more stuff as far as information on the immunization. We're going to be talking about that. We're going to go into more detail about the heart, what the heart does and how the heart works. Doug, I want to thank you so much for having me, for you being on my show tonight.
Oh, man. Yeah, I'll tell you what, Ted, it's an honor. Thank you so much, and God bless you. And folks, visit Health Masters. Let me tell you, they got my seal of approval, saved my life as far as I'm concerned. God bless you, Ted. Thank you so much, brother.
You too, Doug, and I'll talk to you on Wednesday night. Bye-bye.
All right, brother.